Hello, everyone. Welcome to Game Junk Prototype, episode 55, recording on Thursday, April 1st, 2021. My name is Frank.
My name is Sean.
And my name is Andrew.
And we're going to have a big discussion today about digital games. Sony is about to take down the PS3 and Vita stores, and there's a lot of other news in digital gaming. So we'll get into a bunch of topics surrounding that. First, I want to mention, if you're not subscribed to us on YouTube, you should check it out. We've recently posted, and it's youtube.com/gamejunk. And we just posted some Game Junk Plays, the first ever titled Game Junk Plays. Huck has done some Let's Play stuff before, but we're hoping maybe to do some more of this stuff. And we are playing A Way Out. Sean and I in co-op. Sean is fucking up constantly.
You gotta watch to get to see the fuck ups. I mean,
so
that's
I'll be berating him and dropping some soundtrack cues, and it's a whole lot of fun. It's actually might be the perfect game to stream. Laughing or analyzing the robust dialogue in the game.
The cinematic inspirations.
Yes. A lot of cinematic inspirations, which are so transparent, and you can pretty much predict them before you play the game. So, anyway, it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying playing through that with Sean.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm hoping we can do maybe some three-player co-op stuff at some point.
I downloaded Outriders, so.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Let's discuss after.
The only thing is, like, I mean, A Way Out is perfect because it's split screen already, so you only have to kind of record one screen. But when you start getting into games where everybody has their own screen, then it gets tricky. So
yeah, the split screen mode is perfect. It's the perfect streaming game for co-op stuff. So
yeah,
kudos to A Way Out developers. What's the company that made that game?
Hazelight?
Hazelight, yeah. And hopefully we'll get to It Takes Two shortly thereafter.
Oh yeah.
But I'm not playing that game and not getting trophies. I'll tell you that right now.
I mean,
I'll do whatever it takes. I'll bring my PS5 down here. I will buy a capture card. I don't give a shit. I'm not playing a game again and not getting trophies.
Well, I mean, you got to do what you got to do, Frank, but I have played a bit of It Takes Two, so I'll be talking about that and what we played.
Who are you playing with? I thought we were playing together. I'm holding out.
Played a bit with Kieran. He's kind of lost interest, so I'll start over with you. Don't worry.
All right. Yeah, but it's all spoiled. You're gonna know. You're gonna be better than you should be when you're playing. That's half the fun.
I need the edge, Frank. I need the edge
for the first time and understanding the language of game design or failing.
The real question is when you guys play, who's gonna be the wife and who's gonna be the husband?
I'll be the wife. No problem.
That is okay. It's perfect because I'm playing as the wife right now. So
there you go. Well, that's even more reason. You can get the other side. We talked about that in A Way Out. You got to play it again from the other perspective, even though you really don't because you see what's going on. We need to play it and make different choices at certain points in the game.
Right, yeah.
Whether we take the Leo approach or the Vincent approach. Totally different worlds. Totally different guys. All right, well, let's get into news. So, it's weird. We were kind of speculating about this pre-show last week with our guest, Graham, and then almost right after we recorded, the next day, I think, Sony announced that it will no longer support or allow purchasing from the digital storefronts for the Vita and PS3. I believe they said anything...
And PSP as well.
Oh, and PSP, yes. I still got my PSP Go somewhere. I got to get that thing out.
Still got my Hannah Montana one somewhere.
That was just a regular PSP, though, not a Go.
Yeah.
But I think they said they will continue. You'll be allowed to download anything you've previously purchased. And I'll get into that a bit, because this, for whatever reason, it's not paranoia or anything. It's like, oh, I should go back and play some of these games. So I got back into Vita a bit, and I hooked up my PS3. And just going back and remembering how annoying it is to re-download stuff on those systems... I mean, it's brutal. We've come a long way. Digital games is a whole nother level these days.
With the gigantic purchase list that you can't search through.
Oh,
you just have to scan. Yeah.
I had to
scan
scroll
and
through
scan.
993 items today. And it's like DLC avatars that I bought when they were free. It's like, holy shit. Thank God we are no longer in that play space. And even downloading games. I remember because I was downloading a bunch of games and it was download in background. And I remember that wasn't there at first. When you downloaded something, you had to wait on the download screen until it was done. So we've come a long way. That is not that long ago. So you gotta love games. You just gotta love them. I love where we're at. All right. So those storefronts are shutting down. I haven't seen too many people talking about it other than like typically, you know, there seems to be this gap between, I guess the other big announcement that ties into that is Nintendo is no longer, or they pulled Mario 3D All-Stars off the store, which they said they were always going to do. This wasn't like a shock or anything when they announced it. They said, look, this is going away after March 31st. I didn't realize, although I remember it now, that they were going to no longer support Mario 35, which I thought was a pretty fun game, even though I didn't play it that much. But that's gone as well. That one I'm a little torn on. Like, I kind of like that it was a unique one-time experience. I am kind of sad that it's no longer around anymore. I don't see why they couldn't just charge for it or something. Like, it seems weird. But, you know, it's a little different. We were talking about this before the show. We grew up when a console was done, it was done. You want to play those games, you have to break it out, hook it up, see behind me. There's a reason why those consoles don't get played, because I'm not hooking them up. And it's, you know, you just kind of move on, and all these things you say you were going to play, you never played. But I looked at the comments, and a lot of people these days are really angry when backwards compatibility does not exist. They over-exaggerate the capabilities to which it does exist. Like, there's lots of Xbox 360 games and original Xbox games that are not supported in backwards compatibility, and people act like every single game ever works on every Xbox console. So, you know, it's not a perfect world when it comes to backwards compatibility, but I mean, it seems like it's getting much better, except for Nintendo, who is still the worst and makes you buy things 50 times. We'll see if that continues as more Switches come out. But what do you guys think? Are you losing it? Is this a complete debacle? Did you fire up these old consoles and systems? Well, how much do you think their sales are peaking right now? I wish I could see the curve, like when they announce this, like if how much it's going to go up. Anyway, your thoughts.
I think they're definitely getting some sales. I've seen just, you know, threads on Twitter and social media about people wanting to pick up games before these stores are shut down. So it's happening. For me personally, I don't like, I had everything I wanted from those systems. I don't think there's anything that I felt like I got to get this before it shuts down. I'm just happy that for now you can still re-download those games if you own them. I'm sure at some point that's the next step, is that you will no longer be able to download them anymore and they are just done. They're in the ether somewhere, which sucks.
It'll be interesting to see which company does that first, right? Like, some company's going to have to decide to do that and say like, look, sorry, it's gone forever. And company does it first, like, no one is going to want to be the first company to do that. I'll tell you that right now.
But I mean, isn't it up to Sony? Like, aren't all these games just hosted on their servers?
That's what I mean. But if Sony does it first, Sony will be anti-consumer. People will be extremely pissed. And I think once one company does it, others might follow suit. But no one wants to be that company with the current state of social media and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be Nintendo that does it first, to be perfectly honest. I don't think their online infrastructure is very strong. I could be wrong. But I think in a few years' time, Nintendo will be the first that does a move like that. I'm kind of curious. One thing that is never brought up, what about like patches and stuff like that? How does that work? Even if you have physical games, a lot of them are broken when they ship. Like, the version on the disc has issues. Like, they also have to support patches in some way too. So I don't think that this physical media utopia people talk about is that much of a reality with current consoles. That's why it's not that big of a deal to me with the way we patch and upgrade games these days.
Yeah, well, imagine if you had a disc version of Cyberpunk 2077 and waited 20 years to play it and then didn't have any of the patches. You'd probably be pretty pissed. But I... I think I told this on the show before, but I lent my Vita to a friend of mine literally like a month before the pandemic kicked off, and I haven't seen it since. So I'm getting a little antsy that I might not get it back by August when the store shuts down. And I was thinking that I might want to, well, maybe not make sure that I have all the stuff I need. I think I got all the games that I kind of want. But I thought it might be nice to pick up maybe like the last version of FIFA that used the back touch just to have it, because I really enjoyed that mechanic on the Vita. And maybe there's some, you know, hidden gems I didn't purchase that I might pick up as well.
Well, there's a new game coming to Vita as well. I'm pretty sure. Oh, yeah?
I think there's a couple games that are slotted to launch.
Like number 3 game of the year last year is coming to Vita soon. Scourge Bunny.
Oh, really? Wow. Really?
I am pumped. Yeah.
Do they have... What engine does they use?
I don't know.
That's pretty impressive. Because I know when I did Citizens of Earth, I didn't think like Unity or Unreal. I don't think Unity ever supported it, really. I know they were trying to support 3DS, and that I knew that was never going to happen.
I know one of the developer's other games, Neurovoider, I saw was on the store, so they're probably using the same engine, whatever they developed that game in, I would think.
Okay, that's cool. I don't know, is there really... Was PS3 big into digital sales, or was it mostly just like some DLC and like those Avatar things?
There was PSN games very early, like Super Stardust. Oh, okay. HD was a launch title. The full titles, I believe, were not digital at launch. They were only physical. Right. And just like Xbox, I think. It took a while for both of those consoles to basically switch to, you know, digital and physical support. And so some games like are not digital. Like Castlevania Lord of Shadow never became a digital version on PlayStation. It's like Xbox 360. Okay. Some are, some aren't.
Right. Okay. So that would be like Journey.
I think the first downloadable game I bought for PS3 was the Scott Pilgrim game, which just got recently re-released. But I still have it on my PS3. Apparently it got delisted at some point and wasn't available. So, I mean, it's not like that has never happened to games before. Like, it happens all the time with digital games.
Sorry, but can you download that Scott Pilgrim game if you own it?
That's a good question. I don't know. I assume you probably could what's happening.
I'll tell you
now,
right now. I got my PlayStation on right now.
I'm pretty sure I have purchased it as well, and I don't think I have it on my system, so that would be interesting to see. Overall, I'm not too concerned about this, really, like Sean was saying. I mean, I have most of the Vita games I got. I mean, it's kind of sucks in that this would kind of eat up a lot of the, secondary market. If people wanted to buy a used Vita, then they obviously wouldn't be able to buy easily accessible games, which kind of sucks. Like even in, 10 years, because I think the Vita really was only came out like 10 years ago or so, right? It's not that old from what I recall.
Yeah, 10 years old.
And yeah, so, I mean, that kind of sucks because it seems like a viable place to buy. I don't think I've ever bought a physical Vita game, actually. I think all my games I bought digitally. So it seems like it's a natural fit to have digital games. It's kind of like the perfect kind of like upgrade to the PSP Go. And it's kind of too bad. But at the same time, if Sony's not seeing any sales, or at least not a lot of sales, then probably keeping all that infrastructure, that website, running is probably more than they're making off the game sales. So kind of makes sense.
Well, I'll say I did make a purchase this week, actually two. So I still wanted to get that Resistance Burning Skies Platinum, and they're still supporting online servers. So I bought a digital copy, even though I have a physical one, so I could get the online pass because I couldn't. And then I found it literally the next day after I bought it. I found my code for my online pass. But anyway, there was literally the first day I tried to get it, to get a match of 4 people, could not find a soul. I kept checking every day, finally got 4 people in a match. So I got that trophy.
Wow.
And I was number 1 on the leaderboards for that match. I will add that as well. And
that's like,
so I'm going to play some Vita. I bought that, and I bought Stardew Valley, which I somehow have never owned Stardew Valley. So that, I feel like that's a good Vita game.
That sounds like my binary domain multiplayer story. Every time I go into a multiplayer match, I am the only person ever, even if I leave it on for multiple hours. No one ever joins my games.
Yeah, it's just you and like the five other hardcore
I know
people who love that game.
I will never be able to get
each other.
I will never be able to get those trophies. It will be impossible. And it's hard. It's like reach level 100 in online rank.
Oh, man.
And no chance.
So it's weird. I know I bought Scott Pilgrim when it came out, like originally. But when I go to look at it, it's listed as purchased on July 14th, 2020. So I don't know if there was some weird stuff going on behind the scenes with the store, but it looks like I can download it.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, I mean, like, I guess my concern about this whole thing is more the future. Because, you know, there was also some articles this week talking about how digital sales have really taken off over the past year, which is not a huge surprise given the pandemic situation. But I think, I can't remember what the stat was. I think the last generation of consoles started with about 10% digital sales, and now this generation started with like 50%, something like that. So, like, it's slowly overtaking physical. And, you know, I guess it's the same with movies. Like, there's always an audience for physical and collectors who want to own that physical. But I don't know. For me, games are there's less reason to own the physical. Like with movies, if you go digital, you're usually streaming, and the streaming is always quality-wise not as good as the physical media version. Whereas with games, you're just downloading the game. I mean, I guess unless you're playing on xCloud or something.
Even now, like it used to read off the disc, at least you would save storage. Now it's literally just a transfer device. It's a temporary storage.
Yeah. So I really, unless you are a collector, I there's less reason to buy games physically.
But some of the last physical games I bought, it's literally those eco-friendly packages. There's like where they're basically weigh a gram or something. Like there's nothing to them. There's no manual. They feel like I said, just temporary storage mediums. There's no exciting stuff to the actual physical copies. Now, collector's editions are obviously a little different, but I think if anything, I think the article you're talking about, I could see it. They alluded to this. I don't know if they said this exactly. I skimmed it, but I think it's going to go more like records and other stuff where it's going to be like really niche stuff, collector's editions, and you know, there'll be a market for it. They'll probably license the rights to some of these other physical media companies that specialize in that stuff. I mean, it's not like when we were young, when you like Nintendo had to manufacture your cartridge if you wanted to make it, right? Like anyone can, you know, make a disc basically. And I could see that stuff just being outsourced selectively to niche providers.
Yeah, or the big games. You know, like, you know, if you want to order like the cutting edge, you know, Assassin's Creed or Uncharted or whatever the next Sony like big first party title is, I could see them being a physical for those, because those are always going to be big hitters. You're always going to find the guy who doesn't play games very much walking through a Walmart, seeing that game and picking it up, and they'll probably want those customers still. But I think for like the smaller stuff, like I guess quote unquote double A type games, I think those will shy in more towards digital for sure.
Well, the other, I think, argument in terms of physical sales that I can think of is people who don't have access to internet. Like, how could they play a game? And I mean, that's also, how can they patch a game? Like, how can they even play some of these games right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing. Like, you start thinking about, like, just the idea of, you know, trying to preserve games for future generations, or, like, being able to go back and play the classics. You know, there's a point where even if you have the physical copy, can you play these games? Like, I don't even know anymore. Like, just today, I was trying to play Outriders before the show, and Xbox Live was having some issues. I don't know if you guys noticed that today or if you were online at all, but, like, I couldn't play anything. I was trying to play a bunch of games, and, like, they were all, you have to sign in, and I couldn't sign in. So, I mean, we just kind of take it for granted now because we're always online, but a lot of these games do require you to be online to play them.
Well, I think that's because it's Game Pass, right? It has to verify your
Game Pass credentials. Yeah.
But the other... shit, I lost it. Okay, it'll come back to me. Go. It was good, too. It was really fucking good.
Well, so one other thing that is kind of interesting, this whole discussion of going back and playing the classics. So Kieran got this book recently called, I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show, but it's called like 105 Games to Play Before You Grow Up. And it's just like a book that for kids about, you know, like here's some classic games from the past and some classic games current that are family friendly. And it's like, here's what the game's about. And it gives you a little section where you can write your review of the game. And so he was kind of excited about it and wanted to try going back and playing through these games. And we've been kind of going through it. And for the most part, most of them are available and accessible. The only ones I've come across that were really hard to find or will be hard to find are like there's a few PlayStation 1 games that don't seem to have ever gotten a re-release. And I don't own a PlayStation 1. So, but like, I mean, I don't know. Like right now, in terms of backwards compatibility, I think we're in the best place we've ever been. Like, if you want to play an old game, there's a pretty good chance you can find it out there.
Especially really good older games, right? They've been re-released or updated or something. So I agree. That's a great thing. I remember what I was going to say. And does this ever get brought up? Because there's all this, like, you know, PC versus console and stuff like that. Are there still any physical PC sales, which is the superior gaming system? Everyone, like, if you're not on PC, you're a piece of shit.
I doubt it. I mean, who has, like, a...
Like, isn't Steam just digital? No one cares. Like, at some point, game companies are just going to say, like, the case that I'm bringing up where someone who doesn't have internet can't play, they're just going to say, like, okay, they can't play. That's it. We're done. And I think it might be sooner than later.
You're talking about physical PC games, right?
Yeah. Do they exist still?
Not PCs.
Yes, physical games. Like, can you buy a PC game if you don't have internet?
Yeah, like, so few people have disk drives for PCs at this point that what would the physical media be?
I mean, there's... I think I got a collector's edition of StarCraft, you know, that had a USB with the original StarCraft on or something like that. But I mean, still, why does no one complain about this with PC? PC has already done this. PC has gone completely digital to the best of my knowledge. So it always seems like it's a huge issue when a game is or a console is debating doing this. We're already there. It's just, you know, it's weird to me that PC is like, yeah, it's its own thing. Everyone loves it. It's the greatest thing ever, but they don't get held to the same consumer standards as everyone else.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I wouldn't think in terms of collectors either that people are collecting PC games very often. Like, that would be a pretty niche
thing. I bet there were people that did.
Maybe, but...
And what about, like, this was always an issue with PC, like, new hardware not supporting old games. You could never run a game again. People just moved on. Okay, guess what? Can't play it anymore.
Well, that was that's what led to GOG, right? Good old games, and how those games were so hard to get running on DOSBox or whatever you need to do, so they came up with a solution to sort of wrap it and do it themselves, and it seems to be working well. I'm pretty sure they do well. I know Steam is really adding a lot of older games as well. So that seems to be the solution now.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, like...
But you would still have to rebuy it, even if you had bought an old version of the game.
Yeah, probably. Right. But I would say PC right now is probably the best place to get older games currently. Like, they probably have the most stuff available. You would have to purchase it, as you said. But, I mean, there's quite a bit out there. I'm always surprised. Like, I something will pop into my head and I'll look it up and it will be on Steam or good old games and it's there.
But it is interesting that PC, the idea was, you know, it's not a console. It's a piece of hardware that you could use forever. It's like one platform, so to speak, that's always evolving. So it's everything should work forever. It should be the ultimate in backwards compatibility, but, you know, I don't hear the same complaints with old purchases or I have a game on floppy disk. I mean, in theory, I'm sure someone would say, well, go get a floppy disk drive. You can get it to work or something like that. And I don't think it would work a lot of the times. Like, just actually installing a USB, it would be the issue.
I think finding a USB floppy disk drive would be pretty hard. They gotta
exist. I kind of want one now.
Three and a half inch floppy?
They're out there.
So just one other little thing to... Score. One other thing to add to this conversation, too, is they announced this week Microsoft added a bunch of older original Xbox and Xbox 360 games to their cloud service, which was kind of interesting. Like, nobody expected it. They didn't say that was coming. They just kind of were like, hey, here's a bunch of games. We're going to be adding more. So
now, based on what I saw with that, they weren't new backwards compat games, right? These were already backwards compatible. They're just part of Game Pass.
Right, and like part of cloud, which they weren't part of previously. Gotcha. So, you know, there's Perfect Dark games, Gears of War games, stuff like that. It's just kind of interesting. Like, Microsoft, out of all the, you know, all the big game companies, they are definitely trying to embrace backwards compatibility. And I know in the past we've discussed it and kind of said, is that really a factor? It's not, maybe not something that makes or breaks whether some people buy a new console, but it's pretty cool that they're kind of supporting these old games and keeping them alive.
Yeah, I think it is cool, but I think their strategy is, you know, give people whatever they want, right? If people are going to demand these things or be pissed if you don't do it, do everything we can to do that. And they just haven't hit something yet where it's like, I mean, there was the Xbox Live price increase, which they backed out of immediately. So it's, they're just like, we'll do whatever you say. We are so desperate for people to buy our console. We will do whatever you ask us to do. Here's 100 games for $10 a month. Please buy this thing. Christ, we can't sell them. I'm just kidding. I think it's pretty good. But I think that's their basic strategy, which might be pretty smart in today's day and age.
So just a tangent off that a little bit. How do you guys find out what is coming to, like, Game Pass and xCloud and all this stuff? Because I follow Xbox Wire, which I thought was, like, their official Xbox website.
Another marvelous Xbox branding or Microsoft branding.
Yeah, and I just saw today on PC Game Pass that they just added Crysis 3. And that is, like, I can't find that anywhere announced on Xbox websites.
So I find the best way is the app, the Game Pass app.
Well, that's what I mean. That's where I found it. But
yeah, I just go on there like once a week and just kind of like check console tab, PC tab. It doesn't show because I have an iPhone. It doesn't show the cloud tab, so I don't always know what's added there. But, you know, whatever.
I will say Xbox Wire does look like a still daily updated official news source.
Yeah, and it just seems like so strange that they're just throwing so much stuff into Game Pass and they don't really seem to advertise it. It's just like they just keep adding and not telling anyone. Like, they just kind of, it's almost like part of the fun. Like, you have to find what they add and keep coming back. Maybe that's their strategy. Maybe it's like the casino effect where they randomly add games and it's up to you to find them and see what's new and come back and find them.
That's probably part of it. I mean, they do also put out press releases, I think once a month, saying here's the big games that are coming out this upcoming month. But you're right, there's always little ones in between that you don't know about, and it's kind of a surprise when they drop. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, my PC probably has like 2 terabytes of games installed right now that I'm never going to play from Game Pass. I really should just go through and delete everything and start fresh. Yeah. Play one game and that's it.
Reformat, buddy. There's no greater feeling.
I can't. I have like 3 hard drives. I can't reformat them all.
Well, that's 3 days of bliss. One day for each.
No, there's too much other important stuff on there to get rid of.
All right. Anything else to add on this? I'm pretty much tapped out.
Well, I don't know if you must have commented on this before, Frank, but the idea of the Nintendo thing, the exclusivity, sort of the vault for these Mario games, and like, it seems like people are pissed. Like, people thought they clearly announced this is what they're doing, but I think people thought maybe they would change their mind or something, and nope, these games are going away. You can't get them anymore. And they obviously think that this drives sales in some way. And, you know, it's better for them to push people to buy it now than to just have it out there for years to come and get a couple sales here and there. I don't know where their stats come from on that. I don't know if that's actually true, but you love exclusivity. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Doesn't bother me at all. I don't know if it's the best idea. Like you said, they might have numbers that it's smart for them in terms of sales, but if you want to buy it, buy it. If you don't. No problem. I'm always... That seems to be my argument for everything. If you don't think something's a good idea, or, you know, if they're doing microtransactions and you don't like it, you don't have to buy it. No one is making you buy anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Sean is convinced.
I don't really have a huge issue with it either. I just feel like it seems like they could probably make more money over time, but maybe they have to support it and update it. I don't know like what's involved. So, you know, they said what they're going to do. They did it. That's pretty much it. They'll probably re-release it again in 5 or 10 years.
Stop buying Nintendo stuff. Stop supporting their insane prices on things for re-releasing old games. Really. They'll learn.
Maybe.
They won't, because people have to have it. They cannot stop. I'm guilty of the same thing. I've actually gotten way better. I do not buy every Nintendo game, and I will not buy half of them unless they drop drastically in price. So, you know, Nintendo, they are the ultimate free pass company. They get everything they do gets defended, yet they are one of the most anti-consumer companies I've ever seen, and I cannot believe everyone else gets shit on for everything they do, and Nintendo just pray. I'm glad they're doing this. I think they should charge more for these games. And make sure Nintendo provides quality content. And if they need 5 years to finish it, I, for one, am happy. I'm glad they gave me a Metroid Prime 4 screen. At least it lets me know that they're thinking about it. Like, the rationalization of this stuff is insane. Anyway, I don't care either way, but, like, at least let's complain equally about all these companies. If we're going to shit on everything EA does, I think we can throw a little shade Nintendo's way. No?
Probably.
Of course. Yeah.
All right. Sean, title this video, Nintendo, Time to Stop Madness. They are a complete debacle. Or Nintendo, Death of Mario, complete debacle. Got to get the comments fueling again. Gotta add some fuel to that comment fire. All right. We're done with this topic. I'm shutting it down. Sorry, Sean. You look like you got a lot more to say. I won't allow it. Let's move on to what we played. Anyone care to go first, or did we all play Narita Boy?
I played that.
I played it a while back, the demo, so we can talk a little about it.
I fired it up this week. I don't have a ton to say at this point. First of all, the graphic style, art style, I absolutely love it. I think it looks amazing. Gameplay wise, not that hot. The jumping is so loose for a platformer. Like, I'm missing the simplest jumps at the beginning of the game. Like, I don't understand how this gets, like, how a platformer can launch with jump controls that are that shitty. It's beyond my imagination. And like, the combat, I've seen reviews complaining about the lackluster combat. I didn't mind it that much so far. I'm guessing maybe if I did a whole game of it, I might think so. But kind of like Carrion, no map is really confusing, trying to find out where I'm going. It feels like this easily could have been a 9 or a 9.5 game with a map and some tighter platforming controls, in my opinion. But I don't know. I was underwhelmed, to say the least. Well, not to say the least, but just underwhelmed so far. But I added the "say the least" inaccurately, because I want to play this game because it looks so goddamn good. And I'm just like, I can't do it. I'm like, this is not that great. And then I saw the IGN review where they say one level is practically broken. So I haven't got to that level yet, but.
Yeah, I only played it for about an hour. I don't know how far you are, Frank, but I'm going to echo almost everything you just said. I thought the combat mechanics were fine. I do agree the jumping did seem a bit off. Though I think it might be because like the camera maybe goes a little too high when you jump. Like you could jump quite high and the camera follows you and then you can't actually see where you can land. It doesn't... I was finding that a lot of times. I'm kind of just kind of guessing if the platform's below me or not when you're doing some of the higher jumps, I guess, in some of the areas. I found the art style was almost like out of this world on steroids. It was just like that same sort of almost flat color, limited color palette, but it was very detailed. I don't know if that really makes sense, but the animation, especially in the intro video, was really awesome. Like, really well done. It's really high fidelity animations. Now,
which
I don't
is
know
weird, because
this
game
like,
is made for Sean, right? If I was going to say any game in the history of the world, like, what game is made for Sean? It's this game.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, Sean, are you into Japanese culture stuff? A lot?
Scott, mostly.
I've been to Japan, does that, I mean, yeah.
I wouldn't say,
so.
I don't know. I mean, the story elements are, like, set in Japan, from what I can tell, but I wouldn't say it's, like, that heavily Japanese-influenced. Like, the cyber world doesn't, I don't see much of that in there. The other section, the memory section, has that for sure, but it's more like, you know, 80s, Tron, stuff
synth,
Sean
the
fucking
synth soundtrack.
Loves.
Oh, the synth soundtrack's really good. I really enjoyed the soundtrack.
Absolutely.
I felt like there was way too much talking in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Just tons and tons of talking.
Just going and to these pedestals and reading text. Yeah. Like, come on.
They're giving you like three dialogue box explanations of each pillar that you need to activate sometime in the future that I have no idea what they're talking about. Just so much. And
it matters.
It kind
of matters. Like, if you're going to do that, like, make it a joke or something. Like, at least call some kind of meta joke where you realize this is 2021 and we have a million text boxes. Like, I don't know. It's crazy to me that games are still doing this when there's so many elegant ways of incorporating narrative. Like, I know voiceover can be expensive, but if I could walk and explore while I'm listening to this stuff, like, come on.
Speaking of voiceover, I find like when you die, that like kill force or whatever they say, like is kind of out of place.
Rest in force.
Yeah.
The style doesn't match the other stuff. I guess it matches like the saving icon, and I kind of like it. I didn't dislike it that much. But I understand like there's a slight lack of cohesiveness between the art styles, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, one thing, the main, I guess, not the guy you're playing as, but that other character that I wasn't totally clear, but it was like the older man.
That's the
memory. I don't know if it's your dad.
I don't think so.
That guy, that the icon they use for that guy, at least, is almost identical to the icon that the guy who runs Steam Spy uses, or the icon for Steam Spy. Do you guys know that icon?
No.
I was wondering if it was some sort of nod to that, or if that icon is more famous than I know it for. Like, I only know it for Steam Spy, but I thought it was like identical to the icon that's used in the game. Are you looking at it now, Frank?
Yeah, I see the similarities.
Yeah. Anyways, those are my thoughts on it. Pretty similar to you. Also felt very lost, and I probably got about the same way. Did you open
the platforms are tough to read too. Like, there was one spot where I was supposed to jump on a platform, or even the surfaces you can climb. Like, they really blend in with the environment. They don't stick out.
Yeah, I think the problem is that like enemies are red, and almost everything else in the environment is blue, of some sort of blue hue. So
James Cameron, you're looking, I love this fucking game.
You're looking for some sort of like light blue color to climb things and your walkable surfaces, which is not always the easiest to see. Especially when like hazards are also blue, like the water's all blue. So it's not the easiest.
Yeah, I don't have too much more to add. I probably played it less than you guys did. I played the Steam demo from a couple months ago, and it's interesting, like you guys mentioned, that the controls felt a bit clunky, I guess. I felt that too, but I thought, oh, it's just a demo. It's still a work in progress or something, but I guess that's not the case. But I do love the look of it. There's just this interesting filter, I guess, that they have over it. I can't put my finger on what exactly they're doing, but it just looks, it has this retro future sheen to it That is really cool.
It's a Sheen dog.
I thought they were
Sheen dog.
I thought they were trying to replicate like the curvature of like a CRT.
Yeah,
because it kind of bends at all the four corners a bit.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that's what it is. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I love the aesthetic of it, and I do remember there being a lot of reading at the beginning as well. But I am looking forward to giving it a bit more playtime at some point. So,
am I the only one of the opinion like with narrative, less is more?
Like, yes, no, I agree.
I've got another game I can talk about that I was going to kind of bring up that exact point, Frank, which is I played a bit of Disco Elysium, which I didn't know that much about, had been hearing, you know, for, you know, since it came out previously, got some great reviews, you know, hard-boiled detective RPG. I'm like, this seems like something I could get into. But, you know, obviously with RPGs, sometimes I'm like, you know, if it gets really overly complicated or if it's too slow paced, then maybe not for me. But, you know, took a chance on it anyway because they just released the final cut. I think that's what it's called, right? On,
yeah, I think so.
PS5 and other systems as well. And I just, you know, I played maybe half an hour of it just to sort of get a feel of it. And I was right away, I was like, okay, I like this style, but this does seem like it's probably going to be a little too slow for me. And there's just a lot of text, and I guess now they've added voice acting for it, which helps, and the voice acting is solid. And I do really like the writing. Like, it reminds me of kind of like Warren Ellis or something, like the main guy's got this kind of British accent, and it's like just very... I don't know what the word is, just very kind of harsh and
grim.
Yeah, that's callous. And so I like that. And I actually do like the writing, and it's kind of funny and stuff too, but there's just so much of it. Like, I was just in this, the first room that you start in. Did you play this game, Huck, at all?
Yeah. Yeah. I played it for a couple hours.
And like, you're in that first room that you start in, and there's just all these things you're looking at, and he's talking, and like, even just before you even get to that point, there's like pages of text where you're before you wake up from your drunken stupor. And I was like, man, like, this is a lot to take in. And like,
yeah,
no, I have to defend it. I have to defend the game a bit here, Sean.
Yeah.
In terms of your segue, which is Disco Elysium is designed to be about reading.
And it's like a novel.
I guess that's fair. Heavily narrative based, and it's about making choices and learning from consequences of decisions, I believe, and like leveling up skills to reveal more dialogue. It's basically all about the dialogue. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't like it, then you probably don't like that game, which is fair. That's what the game is. With Narita Boy, it's an action platformer. Like, that's where it's like, that's who's going to play this game. Why are we spending so much time on mostly irrelevant story? Now, I hope I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just like a dummy that doesn't like to read text on screens, which is probably true. But like, same thing with Neo 2. I've just platinumed Neo 2 finally, and I couldn't tell you, like, other than a couple of highlight things, what the hell is going on in that game. And I watched every cinematic. I skimmed every text box. I have no idea what the story of that game is at a, like, a fine level. And there's so much text everywhere. I'm just like, I've checked out so quick.
Yeah, I guess like all I would say is like, I think brevity is a virtue. Like, when it comes to games, like, I think, you know, I would compare it almost to comics as far as mediums go, where comics, yes, there's dialogue and writing is important, but if you can just get something across in a couple words instead of like a page of text, then you're better off for it. And I feel like games are kind of like that.
Well, that's why people love From Software games as well, right? Because there is narrative, but it's all like embedded in the world and in items and stuff like that, where if you really want to look into it, you can. Or, I mean, Demon Souls and Dark Souls were some of the first games where they expected people to companion the experience with the internet. Right, look things up, have wikis. So they've almost kind of allowed people to divert that content who want that to drive it themselves away from the game, which I think is extremely smart. And I think more games should do that.
The thing I like about Disco Elysium when it comes to the dialogue, though, is that it is all, well, at least what I played, I don't know if it expands out, but it's all contained in that small area that you start out in. There's really not a huge area to explore, so the area itself kind of takes on little story elements. You have little zones of area where you know, okay, this is where the union workers are doing their thing. This is where the kids found the body. This is where, you know, the kind of like the black markety stuff is. So you kind of have this story that unfolds of the environment as well, and you keep revisiting these areas and talking to different people there and kind of learning the different people. It's not a giant thing where you're traversing this big, large area. That's why I sort of like it, is the environment also becomes like a character. But yeah, there is a ton of dialogue in Disco Elysium, but I agree with Frank that that is sort of the point of that game. And it is funny how your brain has this dialogue going with you, and I did really like the RPG mechanics of leveling up certain skills to unlock new clues and things like that, and you know, just finding little things around to get extra experience to kind of siphon into different things. So it's definitely, if you didn't like the reading in that, I would say that probably shouldn't play too much more, because I think it just keeps going like that. I think it's basically like a choose your own adventure novel in video game form.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to give it a bit more of a chance, but I think, you know, I don't know. I guess I like having played something like Cyberpunk, I was thinking, oh, okay, maybe I can handle, a big RPG with a lot of dialogue and choices and stuff going on, but it's definitely very different from Cyberpunk. So I know it's based on a pen and paper RPG as well or something. I could be wrong, but
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I get it, but I do like elements of it, so we'll see where it goes, I guess.
Practical question, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get both the PS4 and PS5 version when you bought it?
I think so.
Check that out and shoot me a text later, maybe, next time you're online.
Okay.
It doesn't seem to say in the store unless I'm missing something, and
I'm pretty sure when I bought it, it was like PS4/PS5. But I'll double check for you.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I will say I fired up my Vita and I did start playing a couple things on there. A game I played briefly in my Vita days and never finished was, it's a very small game called Titan Attacks. It was kind of like an updated version of Space Invaders, which with more power ups and, I remember liking it, but I never went back to it. And I went and got all the trophies in it, and it was not a long experience, but it is a fun arcade action game on the Vita, which is also on PS3 and PS4. So
I recall that being a PS Plus game, I believe.
Was it? Yeah, it might have been. Yeah,
at one time.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I remember playing quite a bit of that game as well. I remember it getting quite difficult near the end.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's I really enjoyed it. And it reminded me, another game I have downloaded on my PS3, Shatter, I need to get back into.
I remember liking that.
What are the Alleyway, or what's the classic
Breakout?
Version of that game?
Arkanoid?
Arkanoid, Breakout, yeah. That was like basically what Pac-Man, was it DX or Championship Edition did for that genre as well. So that was a really good game. And I also played a bit of Resistance, Burning Skies, which I'm a little early in it, but I am it's a very simple campaign. I almost like that it's stripped down. It's a short game. It's not too confusing or overwhelming. I get to experiment with the weapons of Resistance, which I love. The secondary fire, man, I need Resistance to come back. I think it was high on my list of most wished for things. I want a remaster of Resistance Trilogy so bad. I absolutely love that series.
Now, were all those PS3?
Yes.
Oh, so that's interesting. Because those games were, pretty big. So I wonder if Sony is going to do it now that the store's shutting down.
And they own Insomniac now, right? So
yeah. Though they may have had the IP before that, anyways.
Yeah, for sure. But
because back then, the IP rules were a little different.
Oh, that is the game series. There's nothing I want an HD remaster of more. It is so good. So much fun.
I bet Insomniac would be interested in going back to that, too.
I think the studio's grown quite a bit. Didn't they open, like, I think when they, there was a talk with Ted Price at some point, and he talked about they had opened a new studio somewhere, too, I think. So they're expanding quite a bit. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's in the works.
Yeah.
Yeah, or even a new Resistance game. I mean,
or both. Even better, baby.
Yeah.
Well, they could do like what they did with Ratchet and Clank, right? Remaster the trilogy and then put out a new game a couple years later.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go wrong there. I played the game that went free on the Epic Store just today called Tales of the Neon Sea, which is sort of like a cyberpunk point-and-click adventure, 2D side-scrolling. And it was... I played the prologue of it, so maybe like half an hour or so. It's pretty slow moving pace-wise because you start off and your guy's kind of injured, and then you have to kind of... He's kind of a cyborg, I guess. He has all these like machine parts in him, so you have to go and find kind of the parts and these power things to repair him. And the puzzles in it were pretty good. One was sort of like, you know, shift these things around in the proper order, but there's all the instructions are not clear. The order is not clear. And then there was another one where you have to sneak up on these mice and try to capture them because they have like power cells in them. And then that was pretty well done as well. So overall, I thought it was pretty good, actually. I had never heard of it. I thought, I'll give it a go. Why not? I actually didn't even know it was a point-and-click adventure when I launched it. I just saw some of the screenshots that I thought looked pretty interesting. And I think I'm going to go back to it and play it some more, though it was definitely not a great prologue. It was a little slow. I wish they would have not... You know, they gave you a run button, but even the run button felt like, okay, this should be like the walk speed kind of thing. So hopefully the rest of the game, because you're now repaired, quote-unquote, the game's a little faster, but it definitely could have been an improved prologue, I would think. But overall, I liked it. I think people should check it out, especially as it's free right now for the next week, and especially if you like point-and-click adventures.
Hmm. Yeah, this one caught my eye a little bit. It seemed like it got not great reviews when it originally came out, but it's free, so.
Yeah.
That's cool. So I'll talk briefly about It Takes Two. So I guess you haven't played it at all yet, right, Frank?
No, I was waiting for my friend to play, but
well, we'll get to it, don't worry. But it, actually I was pretty impressed by it. Like it got pretty strong reviews, and I think, you know, as a platformer, I was a little unsure, especially with, you know, we're playing A Way Out now. A Way Out is a cool concept. I feel like some of the gameplay is kind of clunky, not the best. So I was surprised that people were really praising the platforming elements of this game. And it is very fun, very fluid. It reminded me a bit of Unravel, I guess, because, you know, the framing story of it is that, you know, there's a husband and wife that seem to be having some marital issues, and their daughter is not liking that they're fighting and you know, potentially on the verge of getting a divorce. And she makes like dolls of her parents, and then these dolls kind of come to life, and that's who you're controlling. So everything is like these miniature dolls going through like the house and workshop. So everything's bigger than you. So I always find that fun in games when you're sort of a miniature version of something going through the real world. But you know, I think I played the first three levels maybe. One was really cool. It involved vacuums, like vacuum tubes, where it's, you know, one character has to jump in, get sucked into one side of a vacuum, and then the other one is aiming where they're going to shoot out. And the second or third level had to do with one character has a hammer and the other character has nails that they can sort of throw. And recall to themselves. So you can, like, the hammer can break things, or the hammer can be used to swing from things, and the nail can be put in the wall so that somebody can jump on it and get higher. And it's just, you know, very cool mechanics that can be used in a lot of different ways and work great for co-op. So, you know, I don't know if I said this, but it is, you know, like A Way Out, a co-op game intended for co-op. That's why it's called It Takes Two. And it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. So worth checking out if you've got a buddy to play with.
Cool. That's it for me, I think.
I also have nothing else. That game has like 89, 90 on Metacritic right now.
Yeah.
It's really high.
Really good reviews. And I think it's, from what I've seen so far, it seems warranted. Just one other real small thing I'll mention.
You know it's good because it's EA too, right? So if it was, it's probably actually 95 or 96. So
yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
I just thought I'd mention this. I don't know if you guys would have any interest or not, but there is a Crash Bandicoot mobile game that just came out.
I downloaded it. I've yet to fire it up, including
Crash on the Run. It's, you know, like an endless running, well, not endless, but it's a runner game where you have to switch lanes and jump over things. And Crash works great for this kind of game. But the problem is that I only played a little bit of it, but, you know, pretty quickly you get into the monetization elements where it's like, to play this level, you need this much energy. And as soon as I start seeing that stuff, I'm like, yeah, I'm out. So
that's the choice you have as a consumer, Sean. It can't be that good.
It's possible that it's balanced in a way that you can just keep playing and you won't have issues and you won't have to spend money. But it just, as soon as it starts feeling confusing, like I need this much resources to do this thing, I'd lose interest.
Now, is it only resource-based, or can you say, like, just buy the whole game, like Mario Run, and open every level?
It's a good question. I don't think you can just outright buy it, but I could be wrong. Probably would say in the...
Or just unlock every level, because it would, you know, that's a kind of a different version of purchasing in mobile apps that...
Yeah, let me just see here. It would probably say in the in-app purchases, right?
I gotta say, I fired it up right now. It looks really good.
So, yeah, and it looks great. I don't know. There's a $13.99 in-app purchase called The Crate. To me, that just sounds like it's a bunch of resources. It does not sound like it's the full game. And there's one called the Bandicoot Pass, which is $6.99. I honestly don't know. But... you know, if you're a Crash Bandicoot fan, you might want to check it out.
This game rocks. Yeah, I got a tap to spin. Jeez. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to take a couple of shits and play this tonight. Should be pretty sweet. All right, thanks, Sean. Anyway, I think that's it. Thanks for checking us out. Be sure to watch this podcast and Game Junk Plays on youtube.com/gamejunk. Check out Huck on Twitter at My Angry Commute and Equilibrium Sis, and Sean at Film Junk. Until next time, thanks for listening.